So without further ado, let me introduce our first speaker, Dr. Arthur Rolnick. We're live streaming him from Arizona, where he's caring for his wife after surgery. And Dr. Rolnick is a senior fellow and co-director of the Human Capital Research Collaborative at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. He previously was senior vice president and director of research at the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis and an associate economist with the Federal Open Market Committee, which is the monetary policymaking body of the Fed. Now, Dr. Rolnick has authored several papers on the cost effectiveness of early childhood programs. He's given presentations in almost all 50 states and several countries. Now, he first got involved in fundraising to pilot early learning scholarships in a high poverty community in St. Paul. And he was helped raise $20 million of private dollars from businesses such as Target, General Mills, Cargill, and Ecolab. And due to the success of this pilot, Minnesota received a $45 million Race to the Top grant. And recently, the state of Minnesota granted $40 million to replicate the scholarship pilot around the state. He's received several awards for his work on behalf of children, and he serves on numerous prestigious boards, including Harvard's National Scientific Council on the Developing Child. Now, Dr. Rolnick told me his interest in early childhood dates back to a time when two policymakers, a former Minnesota governor and a former Minnesota congressman, asked him to examine the economic impacts of investing in children. At that time, his specialty was pre-Civil War banking. So, you know, he was a little skeptical. But after he completed his analysis, the data were so compelling that he has spent the last decade working to improve early childhood programs. So let's welcome Dr. Art Rolnick, and his talk today is Investing in Early Childhood Development is Smart Economic Development.
Thank you, Karen. As I go around the country speaking on this issue, I tell people for 40 years, I used to worry about banks being too big to fail. Now I worry about kids being too little to fail. And the question I often get as I go around the country, how did I even get started? As Karen mentioned, and thank you for that nice introduction, Karen. As Karen mentioned, my expertise is pre-Civil War banking. 10 years ago, if you asked me about early childhood education, I would have said kindergarten and left it at that. But as mentioned, former governor of the state of Minnesota, Al Quie, a Republican, former Congressman Don Fraser and mayor of Minneapolis, a Democrat, they were looking very hard at this issue. And they had a paper that was recommending that the state spend a lot of money on early childhood education. I happened to attend that lunch. I raised my hand fairly naively, saying, disagreeing in some ways, because they were making a moral argument. They were saying this is the right thing to do. And it isn't that I disagreed that it wasn't the right thing to do or that we should be doing this, but I felt that moral arguments could be made for investing more in K-12, moral arguments could be made in investing in more in higher education and reducing pollution, reducing crime. And I try to make the argument that policymakers need more than moral arguments. And I thought, again, not my expertise, that there could be an economic argument that would be very powerful for early childhood education. Well, that was my mistake, because the governor and the mayor didn't disagree with me. In fact, they asked me to come on their board of an organization called Ready for K, Ready for Kindergarten, and they asked me to do the research. Well, hard to say no to these guys, and I went back to the bank, and one of my young colleagues who headed my economic outreach to K-12 to schools, Rob Grunewald, who, by the way, is a native of Wisconsin. I said, Rob, I've committed us to doing this research. But I said, don't worry about it, because I have a hunch we can go to the research, summarize the results, and we're done. It took us about 3 months. We handed the paper over to the governor and to the mayor, and I thought I was done. That was about 10 years ago. Well, they took that paper and they pushed it out. And I would say for the past 10 years, Rob Grunewald and I have, it's been almost once or twice a week, that we've been asked to speak somewhere around the country. In fact, we've been in a number of countries around the world on this issue. Okay, so what did we say that got all this attention? And my bottom line from this presentation is I want you to think of early childhood development as economic development. And we're going to show from the research that it's economic development with a very, with an extraordinarily high economic return. And I'm going to base this on an awful lot of research and, in fact, two independent lines of research, some longitudinal studies that have followed programs and brain development research. So I'll talk about the research. Again, the bottom line is a very high return. And then, but I'm not going to leave you there. I'm then going to talk about how we took that research to the real world, how we actually implemented these ideas. This was a privately funded initiative. As Karen mentioned, organizations such corporations such as Target, Best Buy, Ecolab, General Mills. We helped raise $20 million to show that we could do this, do it very well, and it was sustainable, and we could bring it to scale. So I'm going to tell you how we got that pilot going, what the results were, and then I'll conclude by talking about some initiatives, mostly in Minnesota, all that's happening around the country, how we're taking, we're replicating these pilots, and it's a very simple model. I'll get into it. It's scholarships for our at-risk children to attend high-quality programs. So what did we say in this essay that got so much attention? First of all, we talk about early childhood development as economic development. So at the beginning of the essay, we made an argument which we had been making for years. I mean, I'm going back maybe 40 years on the conventional way that cities and states fund economic development. Most of it is flawed. In fact, most of it is a zero return. And what I have in mind, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, is what we dubbed the economic bidding war. And this is where cities and states try to lure each other's businesses across city lines, across state lines, with public subsidies, with preferential treatment for various businesses. And I understand from a local point of view, it looks like you're creating jobs when you lure a company from Minnesota to Wisconsin. But from a national perspective, it should be pretty clear that's not economic development. You're just moving jobs around. New York Times a couple of years ago did a study looking at countrywide how much cities and states are spending trying to bid each other's companies back and forth. They estimated something like $90 billion a year this country spends, and from a national perspective, it's a zero return. So I argued in this essay that the wrong way to do economic development is simply to try to lure each other's companies. We can do better than that. So what's the right way? Well, prior to looking at this information, I would have argued the right way, sustainable way, is to invest in human capital. Now, why would I have said that? Well, if you look at the international evidence, if you look at the so-called economic miracles since World War II, countries like South Korea, some countries like Japan, China and India today, Poland, what you find is a critical ingredient is how well their kids are educated, how well their workforce is trained. Human capital has been a major impetus in long-term sustainable economic growth. In Minnesota, I make this case over and over again. We did a study on Minnesota's economy. Going back to the 1920s, Minnesota economy was below the national average in terms of a number of economic metrics. About the 50s, Minnesota starts to outperform the nation. And by the year 2000, and our study was the year 1920 to the year 2000, by the year 2000, Minnesota was one of the top producing economies in this country, in fact, in the world. And what changed Minnesota's economy? We looked at a variety of indicators, and the one that stood out the most was starting in the 50s, Minnesota started to pour money into education. We now have in Minnesota one of the most highly qualified workforces in the country. Our women are number one in high school degrees, and our overall workforce is like in the top seven or eight. And I'm going to argue this is causal. That is, you get a high-quality workforce, you're going to attract good companies. In fact, Minnesota is, I think, number two in Fortune 500 companies per capita. They're not coming to Minnesota for the weather. They're not coming because there's a Vikings. They're coming because we have really high quality workforce. So that's where I started. And then they asked us to look at where should the next dollars be invested? How important is it to invest in early childhood education? So we looked at a number of longitudinal studies. I'm gonna talk about one in particular that's very famous. It's known as the Perry Preschool Study. It began in Ypsilanti, Michigan in the early 60s. They took 120 at-risk children, randomly divided them up into two groups. So the methodology doesn't get much better than this. One group gets high quality early ed. And what do I mean by high quality? It focuses on the parents. There was home visiting, small classroom size, master level teachers, and they're working with the families. All right, so I want to say it's very family focused. Then there was the control group that didn't get this program. They followed these kids for 10 years. Actually, 10 years, it was kind of disappointing. The IQ of the kids in the program goes up, and then by the third grade, it goes down. Often you hear critics of our research is there's fade out, and they point to the Perry Preschool IQ scores, which by the third grade didn't look much higher than the control group. But then you look at the data 20 years, 30 years out, and Rob and I had 30 years worth of data, and you look at outcomes, and the children that were in these high quality programs, much less likely to need special ed, much less likely to be retained in the first grade, more likely to be literate by the sixth grade, graduate high school, get a job, and the difference in the crime rate between the control group and the program group goes down 50%. Now, this was in the literature. Now, Rob and I asked a simple question that most business people and economists would ask. Okay, you invested in today's dollars. It was 3 and 4 year olds. It was a 2 year program. It was a $20,000 in today's program investment. What was the return on that investment? Nobody quite asked that question that way before. So we had this data. We had the data on the cost. We had all this data on the benefits. Now, economists, this is what we do. We can put dollar values on almost anything. So we put dollar values on the benefits of not having to retain a child, not having a child need special ed, having the child being productive, get a job, start a family, stay off welfare, pay taxes, and the cost, the benefit cost, the benefits of reducing crime. So there's a formula that when you got the dollar benefits, dollar costs, you can back out the implied annual return on that investment. Now, as I started earlier, I said we could beat zero. Again, conventional economic development, $90 billion a year, there's no return to this to the national government. But if you look at the stock market, post-World War II, annual average return on that stock market is 5.8%. Real, and that is inflation adjusted. That's not my 401k, but that's what the market delivers. Okay, so that's the hurdle. If we're going to take money out of the economy, we got to make the case we can beat 5.8. So when we calculated this return from Perry Preschool, I figured if we can get a 6 or 7% return, we can go back to the governor, we can go back to the mayor and say, look, guys, this looks like a pretty good investment. When we backed out the rate of return on Perry Preschool, we got an 18% inflation adjusted return. And I'm going to argue today that was a conservative investment. That was a conservative number because we didn't have data on siblings in the family. We didn't have data on teacher productivity. We didn't have data on the parents. It turns out afterwards we found many of these parents went back to school and got jobs. We're just starting to get data on children of the children. So even though at the time I thought that 18% number looked way too high to be believable, I'm going to argue today that that 18% number actually is a conservative number. Now you might say, fine, that's one study, Rolnick, but that's all, and it's a small sample size, but we have, actually there's now about a half a dozen longitudinal studies, some starting at birth, all showing extraordinarily high rates of return. Now we have our critics, it is true. Any one of these studies, there are problems. Some studies have problems with randomization, some studies have problems with some degree of fade out, et cetera. But even accounting in the best econometric techniques we have, even accounting for these problems, we still get double digit returns. So that's one line of research I found very convincing. Man by the name of Jack Shunkoff heard me speak in Boston. He brought me into his office. He was at Brandeis at the time. He's now at Harvard. He said, Rolnick, sounds good. I know you're going to have a second essay advocating a public policy. I suggest, though, that if you're looking at the most vulnerable kids, you're starting too late. And I had no idea what he was talking about until he showed me the neuroscience research on brain development that's been occurring over the last 15, 20 years. So they do brain imaging of these children, and when children are in stressful environments and equate stress and poverty, the physical brain doesn't develop properly. In fact, by age 3, there are serious physical problems. The extreme example is the Romanian orphans, which you may remember, that was extreme neglect. They had very little interaction with adults. The brain imaging of those brains show they're about a third smaller, physically smaller, than what a normal brain development would show. And there's been an awful lot of research since that study showing that stress, they call it toxic stress. Toxic stress affects those babies' brains right at the very beginning. So Jack challenged Rob and I, saying, if you're going to have a public policy position, you better start earlier than 3 and 4. So we had a number of challenges. It's got to be high quality. You're not going to get the kind of results we saw in these longitudinal studies if it's not a high quality program. It better be focused on the parent and empower those parents. You don't get these results if it's not focused that way. It better start early, better be focused on the parents, better be high quality. And we argue, if you can't bring it to scale, you're going to fail. If you're only going to do this for 20% of the kids, if that's all you got a program, if it's difficult to bring to scale, you're going to fail. You're leaving too much on the table here, too many kids behind. So what was our proposal? Very straightforward, a couple of economists, it's not going to surprise you, were trained to understand the power of markets. And so we call this a market-based approach. And it's very simple. We start our parents with scholarships. Scholarships not for these children to go to the University of Minnesota or University of Wisconsin, but to go to high-quality early childhood programs. Now you say to me, well, okay, that's good for 3 and 4-year-olds, but what about the early years? So they're really scholarship plus, and the plus part is, in our program that we advocate, we start our parents with home visiting nurses prenatal. A whole different study showing if you start families that way, you reduce infant mortality, you reduce low birth weight babies, and these kids start healthier, the parents start healthier, and you get these, again, long-term double-digit returns. So it's a combination of a mentor working with a family and a home visiting nurse. So that was a program. I was very fortunate when I was speaking on this issue, a man by the name of Warren Staley, who at that time chaired Twin Cities United Way and was the CEO of the Cargill Company, one of the most successful private companies in the world. And Warren said, okay, Rolnick, it sounds good on paper. Let's see if we can actually do this in practice. So what Warren Staley did is he asked a bunch of his colleagues and friends to join a new foundation. It's called the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, MELF. And the idea was to raise $20 million. He brought on the CEO of General Mills, the CEO of Best Buy, the CEO of Ecolab, the CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield, president of the University of Minnesota, president of the Taylor Corporation, family owns our NBA basketball team. He brought on Charlie Weaver. Charlie Weaver was former Governor Tim Pawlenty's chief of staff, who heads an organization called the Business Partnership, represents 100 of the top companies in the state of Minnesota, and with significant support from the Target Corporation. So this was a very business-oriented foundation, 5-year sunset. The idea is we were going to test this out, see if it works, and then hand it off to the state. So MELF did two things. We created a rating system. It's called Parent Aware, and we go around the state, and we have a 4-star rating system, and we're encouraging, through some incentives, these early ed programs to become 4-star rated. They have the quality that we need. So this benefits all families. And then we circle the neighborhood in St. Paul. It's known as Frogtown. It's a very low income, very diverse neighborhood. And we simply said, if you live in Frogtown and your income is 185% of poverty or below, congratulations, your child gets a scholarship. No strings attached. You decide. You, the parent. You're not told you have to go to Head Start. You're not told you have to do anything. We give you tools. We give you a scholarship, and we give you a mentor. And the scholarship, the only condition is the scholarship has to be used at a 3 or 4 star rated program in your community. My critic said to me, wait a second, Rolnick. You don't have 3, 4 star rated programs in Frogtown. This is a low income neighborhood. Well, when the word got out in the market that we gave out 650 scholarships, paying up to $13,000 a year, within 6 months, a private early ed program called New Horizon opened up a brand new facility in Frogtown. Montessori expanded theirs. Faith-based groups expanded theirs. St. Paul's School got into the early ed program. And our parents got to choose anywhere among 6 or 8 different 4 and 3 star rated programs. So the market responded. We didn't have to tell the market to do anything. It worked. And we now do focus groups with our families. We are following the children. We brought in an outside evaluator. And I can tell you by the 1st and 2nd grades, our kids looked very much like the majority kids. Because of the success of that program, Washington got very interested in this, both sides of the aisle. And we received $45 million in Race to the Top to replicate what we did in St. Paul and a number of the other communities in Minnesota. Our theory, our hypothesis was parents are parents, and we could replicate this anywhere. So we are now in the process of replicating this in the north side of Minneapolis, one of the most poverty, crime-ridden communities in the state. We are replicating it there. We are replicating it on White Earth, which is a reservation up in northwestern part of Minnesota, and in a rural community in Itasca County. And as we speak, I'm working in Rochester, Minnesota. I am talking with the mayor and the superintendent of the school and United Way and Mayo Clinic. We're planning on building an organization to replicate it, a similar pilot in Rochester. It should be clear, I have an agenda here. I want to show the state that we can do this anywhere. We can easily bring it to scale. There's very little administrative cost to this program. We work with existing infrastructure. And the idea is ultimately to fund this for every poverty child in the state in perpetuity. And I'm going to argue, and I have around the country, and I have at the White House, that you won't find a better economic development investment. I criticized the White House many years ago. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. A significant amount of public money went to General Motors. I said, I don't care how much money you give to General Motors, 75% of the children in the Detroit public schools don't graduate high school. It's a third world economy now, and it will be a third world economy 20 years from now if you do not educate your kids. Let me end on one note to try to convince you how important investing in human capital is. The value of a college education relative to a high school education, what economists call the education premium, is roughly, when I was going to school back in the 60s, was roughly 40%. That is what my mom told me to do. You want to go to college because you'll earn more money over your lifetime. That meant roughly 40% more if you had a college degree relative to a high school degree. That education premium today has grown to 80%, and it's growing even more. It's very clear the market has spoken. They want educated and trained workers. That's how you sustain economic growth. It's not by building more sports stadiums. It's not by subsidizing more corporate headquarters. It's not by luring companies from other cities. That's a zero-sum game, guys. You've got to educate your workers. You've got to train your kids. And the best investment and the highest return right now, the next dollars, it's pretty clear. They should be going to high-quality early ed for our most vulnerable kids. They're going to be, we have more and more kids being born into poverty. If we don't start closing this gap, this education gap, this income gap, et cetera, this is the way to make significant progress. This is the best program I've seen. We challenged 10 years ago, we said we would argue this is the best investment the public can make. Nobody has questioned that. There have been critics who say we should take this a little bit slower because we got a lot more learning to do. And I don't disagree. We're going to learn a lot as we go, and we're going to get better. But we have enough evidence now to show us, enough scientific evidence now. You're not going to go too far. You're not going to go too far wrong if every poverty child in Wisconsin had this opportunity. thank you for my opportunity to speak to you this morning. And of course, I'll be happy to answer any questions.